SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 1st of October 2024. The Australian share market fell today, down by 0.7%. We'll have the details with Mike Janecki from UBS in a few moments. But first to aviation, and Virgin Australia is seeking to sell 25% of its airline to Qatar Airways. It says it would increase competition and the number of flights internationally. But what will it mean for consumers? For more, Michal Oskanal spoke with Ellis Taylor from Cirium.
This is a deal which has been sort of some months in the making. And from what we understand, Virgin Australia, they're owned by Bain Capital, a private equity firm that rescued them out of administration. And we've known for some time that Bain has been looking for an exit to that. It's going to be somewhere down the line. We know that they were looking at an IPO last year, and that sort of got delayed. And without that IPO, really the next best thing was to pursue a trade sale or selling to another airline. So this cornerstone stake really means that there is going to be a core investor that's going to own Virgin. It is still going to go to an IPO at some point, probably within the next year or so. But really, they've sort of set this up as being that they're going to have this core airline backing Virgin when it does go to the market. And it's important because Qatar Airways is one of the leading global airlines. It's one of the brands that's well known around the world. But it is also an airline that's been trying to get more exposure into the Australian market. And so really, that's what this deal will open up for them.
Okay. And how will the deal actually work?
So this deal will see Qatar Airways take a 25% stake in Virgin Australia. And from there, they'll actually use aircraft operated by Qatar Airways to fly Virgin flights from Australia to Doha. So in some ways, it'll effectively allow Qatar Airways to potentially double the number of flights that it has going into its major hub. And at the same time, they're getting exposure to the Australian domestic market, which is really where Virgin has focused back on sort of since it's come out of administration. They did previously have a long haul operation that went to primarily to the US. And into parts of Asia, but that was really lopped off. They got rid of the aircraft that were doing that. And so now they're talking about sort of using Qatar Airways planes, but operating Virgin flights to be able to go back into that long haul market, initially to Doha, but it could open up other routes as well.
Okay, and you mentioned the various approvals that it still needs, and that includes the government. And it follows, obviously, the government's rejection of Qatar's requests last year to fly more planes into certain cities in Australia. Do you think it will get over the line this time?
Look, it's probably a more palatable thing than sort of just opening up more rights to Qatar to allow them to come in. At least in this way, we've seen that Virgin has very strongly emphasised the economic benefits that this arrangement would bring. And they've talked about, you know, new jobs, a $3 billion boost to the economy from the additional flights, etc. So really, they're kind of setting the stage there to almost dare the government to block it from here. We do know and we expect that there's going to be some pushback from other airlines in the market. Likely Qantas will be lobbying quite hard against it, knowing that, you know, they're going to end up with a competitor who has access to a lot of planes and a lot of cash to be able to scale up Virgin. And no doubt there's some legitimacy to the point as well that this is kind of just Qatar Airways trying to use a backdoor to get more flights in by using a flag of convenience in Virgin Australia. But having said that, the positives are there. Obviously, more capacity coming into the Australian market tends to put downward pressure on airfares. And in this case, that'll be on the routes to Europe, particularly going through Doha, as well as, you know, potentially to Africa and the Middle East itself. So really, it should be one that I think it will be approved. I don't expect that there'd be a hard resistance against it. But it may also be something where it could approval of it could get kicked down the line, potentially post the election, depending on how the government sees it. This Labor government has really strongly resisted, you know, trying to give additional flights to Qatar Airways. So you wouldn't necessarily rule out them trying to wait until after that election to potentially make it not their problem anymore.
And you briefly mentioned the consumers there. And in relation to them, what will this mean both in terms of flying options, prices, and competition internationally and domestically?
So on the domestic front, obviously having a stronger competitor behind Virgin Australia gives them access to more capital, and that really should strengthen Virgin's position in the market. They are sort of hemmed in on either side by Qantas and Jetstar, and so that dynamic will kind of keep them into a spot. But it does also mean that they will have access to more finance, they'll have access to more aircraft, and they'll be able to go on a growth journey. Really, I think the biggest impact, though, will be on that international market. If Qatar Airways is effectively able to double the number of flights they've got by using, the Virgin and operating those flights as Virgin flights, it will mean that they'll be able to get a lot more access into the key gateway cities of Sydney, Brisbane, Perth, and Melbourne. And that's really where it's going to start driving down airfares to places like Europe. You'll see a lot more competition with the likes of Emirates. And at some level, Singapore Airlines and Cathay Pacific as well. And that really just brings about benefits to the consumer. That then flows the other way as well, where that competition in some of those European markets is actually really good for our tourism industry. And we generally see that more tourists come in from those markets when the airfares come down, particularly post-COVID, that's been a big concern. So any new capacity coming in will surely be welcomed by the tourism industry.
Okay, and we spoke about why Virgin would be open to this, but where is this coming from in terms of Qatar Airways' perspective?
I guess another point to that, it's worth pointing out that Qatar Airways have been quite acquisitive in recent months. And it's quite interesting because we've also seen a change of CEO there in the last few months as well. So the previous CEO was very bombastic and created quite a reputation. But there's a new CEO there now who's really shown that this airline is willing to open the checkbook in some cases to overcome barriers that there are in place. Now, previously, he'd said that he was hopeful of some good news from Australia. Obviously, that hasn't come. And that's really what's opened the way for this investment for them to go deep into Virgin. It's an airline that they've got a relationship with already. And really, that's going to see things just sort of go even further forward from here.
Alice Taylor there from Cirium.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On the Money podcast.
After hitting a record yesterday, the Australian share market fell today. The S&P ASX 200 down 0.7% to 8,208. For the details, I spoke with Mike Jenneke from UBS Wealth Management.
The main reason for the downward move, it's really just profit-taking. We hit a record high yesterday. And if you looked at it on a sector basis, the sectors leading the decline are more economically sensitive. Financials and mining were the key areas of weakness. It seems to be there was an absence of follow-on news from China. That was really significant last week. There's a holiday week there this week. And that has contributed to the profit-taking we're seeing in the mining stocks in particular. And then on the positive side, sectors doing better today are just the more defensive or growth-orientated stocks.
Before we go into detail about China, I think one of the lead general news stories that we're talking about is this escalation in the conflict in the Middle East. Is that having any impact on markets?
At this stage, the developments in the Middle East have had pretty limited impact on markets. Oil prices have actually weakened recently. Markets are more concerned about a potential increase in supply from OPEC rather than any potential for disruption. Gold prices have been strong, but it seems to be less about geopolitical risk and more about just a structural increase in investment demand that's coming from emerging market economies and central banks. And the other sort of safe haven options that you typically look for, such as the US dollar and US treasuries, have remained pretty well behaved. So limited impact at this stage.
Now, on China, the interesting thing is that China's main share market, the Shanghai Composite, has been on a tear recently, up around 20% in just five trading days, right? And as you mentioned, it follows that raft of economic stimulus packages that we saw come through the economy last week. It's heading into a week-long public holiday, which started today. What's your take on the stimulus and the implications for both China and Australia?
Well, our broad take at UBS is that last week represented a sea change in policy attitude. with a firm commitment to meet official economic growth forecasts of around 5%. Importantly, policymakers have explicitly pledged to stop the property market from falling. So our view is that we're likely to see more stimulus and more forceful execution, which has been disappointing this year. And so that sort of turnaround is significant and will lead to a cyclical improvement in Chinese growth. From an Australian point of view, Australia will be a beneficiary through the improvement in commodity prices, which have been weak, and should have already rebounded quite strongly from their cyclical lows. On the ASX, the resource sector is a significant beneficiary, while from an economic perspective, the domestic economy will benefit from the improved fiscal revenues that flow through to the government. And it is worth bearing in mind that we're moving into a federal election cycle. So the likelihood is that will flow back into the economy.
So now that you're talking about the Australian economy, we saw retail sales rose more than expected, according to the ABS today, up by 0.7% in August. At the same time, yesterday's federal budget update seemed to suggest consumers are actually saving their tax cuts to pay down debt instead of spending a lot of that. What's your take on the local economic environment and the implication for interest rates here?
Our take on the local economic environment is that the economy is holding up reasonably well. We're actually quite constructive on consumer spending. We're expecting to see a cyclical upturn. That's based on our UBS economics team's view and is corroborated by some of the survey information that we receive. What we're really seeing as drivers of that is an improvement in real disposable income on the back of the fiscal easing and lower inflation. And then, of course, from a monetary policy perspective, we are expecting to see the Reserve Bank lower rates, likely in February, and that easing cycle should also assist the economy to improve its growth trajectory.
And finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors right now?
Well, the key thing to note from an investment perspective is that the returns on cash are likely to fall. That's because of central bank easing globally, which will also occur in Australia in 2025. As an alternative for conservative investors, you can lock in higher rates through a purchase of high quality government and corporate bonds. From an equity perspective, we're expecting to see a soft landing, and so the profit cycle turning up should be positive for equities. So all in all, we're expecting reasonable returns from financial markets despite the strong returns we've already had, and investors should be prepared to invest in risk assets according to their risk profile.
Mark Jenicke there from UBS.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.